Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So in today's episode, we are back to dealing with the elves as they've now managed to beat back the spiders and Bilbo has effectively saved all of the, well, maybe not all of the dwarves, but it seems like all of the dwarves at this point in the story. And so we're back to dealing with the elves again. And this section of the chapter is interesting in the way that it portrays the elves. We're about to get a significant portion of backstory in a way. Well, not deep levels of backstory. It's not like we're delving into the Silmarillion again, but we are touching on some of the things that do come up in the Silmarillion, because you have to remember that when Tolkien was writing The Hobbit, he had in his mind, initially not including this in his greater legendarium, but eventually that became the setting. And so when entering into a situation like we are now, where they're dealing with elves, but elves that seem not particularly helpful, he has to explain why. And you'll notice, as we go through this section, there are multiple times where he tries to reinforce the idea to the reader that elves are not evil creatures, that they are good people. But like any good people, they have reasons for being suspicious and careful and defensive, especially when it comes to dwarves. And that's the part that ties back to the events of the Silmarillion. We'll get into it as we go through, but keep that in mind, that this is something that Tolkien absolutely wants the readers to understand, is that these elves, although they seem like a problem, they seem like a thing getting in the way of the party, of our heroes, are not necessarily bad. They might be prideful, they might be careful, but they are not evil. So they've escaped the spiders, and they've been heading back towards, at least to the best of their ability, the place where they originally came from. That place where they last saw the lights and the singing and the feasting of these elves in the forest. We get this line here. The dwarves then noticed that they had come to the edge of a ring where elf fires had been. And the ring here, I believe, is very intentional. Remember that elves are associated with fairy. In fact, originally, that's how they made sense in the Legendarium, is that the elves were fairies, and the Fae was the place where the elves lived. And of course, we've talked about this multiple times. But with that in mind, you have to remember the way that mythology handled fairies. Something like a fairy ring or a fairy circle were very common explanations for the kinds of phenomena you'd get in the forest, where you might find what appeared to be a circle of mushrooms or flowers or something else that made roughly a circular shape on the ground of the forest. The justification for this, mythologically and sometimes historically to the people who lived in those areas, was that this was a magical phenomenon. Rings, circular shapes, show up all throughout religious symbolism, mythological references like this, esoteric philosophy. So sure, it's a fundamental shape, it's a very basic shape, a circle. It's something that shows up in nature, and it also is naturally how you would set up, say, stones around a fire in order to contain it. All of those things are true, but the need here, or the intentionality to point out a ring of elf fires, is, at least it feels intentional to me, due to the connection with fairy. So the party feels like they're back in the right spot. And then we get this other little note here in the text. It seemed that some good magic lingered in such spots. Remember, Tolkien is trying to make sure that we understand the difference between what feels like evil and what feels like good. But just because something feels good doesn't mean that it doesn't have some intention for itself. Bjorn is a good character, but Bjorn is very careful about how he deals with strangers, for good reason. Elves are similar in that regard. We also get a note here that the light was greener. Things appeared a little bit less dark and scary in this part of the forest, which makes sense, because this would be somewhere where the elves were commonly going to gather, and so therefore they would be keeping away things like spiders, not just with their bows, but also with this form of good magic. They have this feeling of being in a place and making it theirs and keeping out things that don't belong there. So now, time for the elephant in the room. Bilbo has revealed to them that he has a magic ring, that he can turn invisible, and so he has to explain himself. And he explains himself very carefully, and they become so interested in his story. And in fact, it mentions here that Balin, and again, Balin, very shrewd, very smart, insists on having more of the story told to him. Who is this Gollum creature? What's with the riddles? Tell me the story again. I want all of the details. He seemed particularly keen on this in a way that somebody like Gandalf would have been. But remember, Gandalf isn't here right now. So Bilbo explains the story again, inserts where the ring shows up, and they actually seem very positive about this at this point in the story. Now, they're not just concerned here about the ring and Bilbo turning invisible. They're wondering all sorts of questions. Where were they? Where was their path? Was there any food? What were they going to do next? And I noted in the previous episode that these kinds of questions have that, they have kind of a feeling to me like the kinds of questions the author is asking themselves as they go through the story. These are the things I need to solve for the party. How do I solve that? And there is a solution, but we'll get there. I particularly like this part right at the end of this paragraph where it says, "It was from little Bilbo that they seemed to expect to get the answers, from which you can see that they had changed their opinion of Mr. Baggins very much, and had begun to have a great respect for him, as Gandalf had said they would." Notice some little details in here. It starts off by saying, little Bilbo. The text is emphasizing the fact that Bilbo is small and yet achieved a big thing. And they're now looking to him for answers. They're looking for him to be their leader. And we haven't been filled in yet that Thorin isn't with them. So Bilbo appears to be this fill-in character for the leadership that's happening here because Thorin isn't responding and they haven't noticed that he's not here yet. But I think that's worth noting is that they aren't noticing that Thorin is missing because they aren't looking for Thorin to lead them in the next step. They're still relying on Bilbo. They're now defaulting to Bilbo as the person who solves their problems and decides where things are going to go. And of course, Gandalf predicted this correctly. And we get this entire description about how thankful they are for what Bilbo did. Some of them even got up and bowed right to the ground before him, though they fell over with the effort and could not get on their legs again for some time. This is another one of those comedic moments that feels kind of stuck in there in order to make them feel a little bit cartoonish. But even though this is comedic, it shouldn't reduce the fact that they are extremely thankful. They're looking up to Bilbo to help lead them. And knowing the truth about the vanishing, it says here, did not lessen their opinion of Bilbo at all. In fact, they saw this as a boon. He's got wits, he has luck, notice luck again is mentioned here, and even a magic ring. That's a good thing. They're thankful for the finding of the magic ring the same way that they would be thankful for finding weapons or allies to help them through. This is just another feature that's going to help them get to their goal. But they need to decide what to do next, and they are still exhausted. But the most important thing about everything that's happening right here is its effect on Bilbo. It says, they praised him so much that Bilbo began to feel that there really was something of a bold adventurer about himself after all. This feels like the second time we've hit this point where Bilbo starts to go, oh, maybe there's more to me than I thought. Maybe I'm more capable of these things than I thought. And he's starting to see the proof. When you look back at what he accomplished, saving them from the spiders, that was no small feat. He needed his wits. He needed his strength. He needed his courage. And without any of those things and the luck that he seems to have, there's no way they would have gotten out of that. So in the midst of this, Bilbo is, of course, the one who comes up with the solution for at least what they should do next. search for the lost path. And then we get this exclamation mark, and Tolkien inserts exclamation marks. A lot of authors avoid them, but he says, the lost path. This is an idea. This is a light going on in his head. No other idea would interrupt that idea in his tired head. So we get back to the idea that they are all exhausted, but I love this little detail about Balin, who seems to have loved the story that Bilbo explained to him. And he's, of course, trying to fall asleep, but he's muttering and chuckling to himself as he does so. Gollum, well, I'm blessed. So that's how he sneaked past me. Remember when he snuck up on Balin and Balin was very confused about how he was able to do that? Well, now he's like, oh, I get it. Now I know. Just crept quietly along, did you, Mr. Baggins? Buttons all over the doorstep. Good old Bilbo, 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 Bo, Bo. Bo, and I love how it kind of trails off as he falls asleep. And as clever as Balin is, it's Dwalin who realizes that Thorin is missing. All of a sudden he wakes up. Where is Thorin? He asks. Where indeed was Thorin? They wondered what evil fate had befallen him, magic or dark monsters, and shuddered as they lay lost in the forest. Now notice the wondering here is kind of accurate. It's not an evil fate. Again, it's the elves, who we're going to be reminded are not evil. But it is magical. Elves are magical. The fact that they were able to put out Thorin's lights, as it will mention here in a moment, is a magical thing. And you might expect that in this moment, realizing that Thorin wasn't there, that they'd all get back up and start looking for him. But it says something about the sheer exhaustion that they have in this moment that they are not able to do so. They fall back asleep, uncomfortably, with horrible dreams. And then it ends up very dark as the night comes on, and we are then told that we must leave them for the present, too sick and weary to set guards or to take turns at watching. Then the story moves somewhere completely else. This is one of the few times where it just takes the scene and the camera pulls back, and then we get some sort of montage about what else is going on somewhere else, or the past. And we get kind of a combination of those things. So Thorin, of course, was caught, and it explains to us that he was the one who stepped into the circle that last time, and the lights went out, and he fell like a stone enchanted. And there's a parallel here. Not only did the lights of the fire go out, but the lights themselves, the way his mind can perceive things, his lights went out as well. He passed out and fell like a stone enchanted. And I don't think this is written in a way for us to go, oh, I know what a stone enchanted falling down looks like, because that doesn't make any sense. Nobody would have that experience. But we all know what a stone falling down feels like, and this one happened to be enchanted. That's how that sentence parses out. And this section feels like an answer to the question that was being posed before. What do they do? Where do they go? What's going to happen next? How do they handle what's going on? Well, if Tolkien comes up with a solution here and is like, oh, I haven't mentioned Thorin yet. Thorin is missing. They're too exhausted to have really realized that. And when they do, they're still so exhausted. Now I have a way to connect the story into the elves. So let's go with that. That's kind of my feeling about that, because oftentimes, when things like this happen in the story, he will telegraph them. In fact, he'll tell us ahead of time. Imagine a version of this story where, when they first run into the elves for the first time, he lays down something like, little did Thorin know that he would soon be visiting their dungeons. That feels like something Tolkien would write into here that kind of gives away the result that's about to happen before it happens. He does this multiple times throughout many of his works, but he doesn't. This feels like it's inserted in after as kind of an answer that he hadn't perceived it before. Now, of course, he could have gone back and rewritten those sections or rewritten the section, probably did multiple times. So again, this is just speculation on my part. But to me, from a subjective perspective, this feels like one of the reasons why this could have been written this way. And then he realizes, and at least this is what appears to me, that he has to give some explanation about who these elves are and what's going on, because he's not ready to move into the situation where we actually meet them yet. And so we get this interesting description here that, again, reinforces that they are not evil, but that gives us a backstory. So let's start with the feasting people were wood elves. Of course they were wood elves. They live in the forest. Of course they were wood elves. But we know that wood elves doesn't just mean any elves who live in the forest. It means a very particular group of elves who descended from the other groups of elves millennia ago. So long ago that it's not actually documented in any historical way that actually gives us dates. Because you have to remember, the wood elves are the Avari, or some of the wood elves are the Teleri. They were the last group that was supposed to go over and go to Valinor. And then they got to the mountains, and then some of them didn't. They left, and they didn't go any further. And some of them went over the mountains, and some of them followed Thingol, and then got stuck there and stayed in Doriath, and eventually became the Sindar. So wood elves isn't just elves who live in the woods. Wood elves is a very particular group of elves who happen to live in the woods and have traditionally lived in wooded areas, but they are still of a specific line of elves with their own history. And like I've noted before, Thranduil is Sindarin. He and his father served under Thingol in Doriath before they came to Mirkwood and took, well, over what was going on with the wood elves in Mirkwood. So we have to remember there's some connections here, and there's history to this, and we're going to get more into it. And if you are looking for a refresher on the background of how all these groups of elves are connected, we're going to go over that in the bonus episode this week. You know, it's hard to pick what I like the most about Rosetta Stone. I mean, first of all, they make learning another language so much easier, and all of us can become a lot closer to J.R.R. Tolkien in that sense, and yet he didn't have access to Rosetta Stone, but that gives us an upper hand. We can learn faster, we can retain the information longer, we can improve our pronunciation without having to be in a room full of native speakers. We can learn anytime and anywhere, and all of that is what makes this incredible. But beyond all that, there's even better news. 50% off lifetime membership right now. That's what you can get. That's 25 languages. That's a mobile app, a desktop app. You can use it anywhere you want. It's kind of incredible when you think about it. Lifetime membership, 25 languages you could learn for the rest of your life. So don't wait. Unlock your learning potential right now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. So here are some of the things that stand out in the text that I find particularly interesting. The very next sentence says, "These are not wicked folk." Again, they are not evil, but they have a fault. They distrust strangers. Their magic is strong, and in those days they were very wary. They differed from the high elves of the West and were more dangerous and less wise. Now, I have to take a little bit of umbrage with that. If you look at the events of the high elves in the West and the kinds of decisions they made, maybe they weren't always the wisest things to do, but of course, wise doesn't necessarily mean shrewd and able to make good decisions, although it can mean that, but it can also just mean learned. These are elves who have a grasp of their history, they've learned a lot, they've served underneath the Valar, or they are descended of people who have served underneath the Valar, they have a history of knowledge and recording that knowledge, so therefore they are wise. But it can also mean good at making decisions. That can apply, but a lot of the wise make bad decisions. It also says they descended from the ancient tribes that never went to Faerie in the West. This is Valinor, right? They didn't go off to the West. These are not descended of the Noldor who then returned to Middle-earth. And then we get this little breakdown of the different groups that actually did go off to that part of the world. The Light Elves and the Deep Elves and the Sea Elves, the Vanyar, the Noldor, the Teleri, those are the elf groups that go over, right? And these elves in the woods, these wood elves, are not them. They're not descended of those groups. But Tolkien isn't going to stop explaining bits about the distinction of different elves there. He explains that they grew fairer and wiser, they learned more, they invented their magic and their cunning craft. Notice magic and craft are kind of interconnected here. Magic is a sort of craft. Craft is sort of magical when it comes to elves. Those two things are inherently intertwined in a way that they aren't necessarily for other cultures. They loved making beautiful things, marvelous things, and some came back into the wide world. This we would understand to mean some of the Noldor returned to Middle-earth. Then we get this entire section, which I'm going to read, because it gives us a good description about who these wood elves are. It says, "In the wide world, the wood elves lingered in the twilight of our sun and moon." Translation, in Middle-earth, these green elves, these wild elves, maybe some of them are Avari, stayed before the sun and the moon were even created. They did not go off to the land of Faerie. They stayed here. They loved best the stars, and they wandered in the great forests that grew tall in lands that are now lost. So they came from the far east. We don't talk about those lands anymore. They've disappeared from historical memory, in a way. They dwelt most often by the edges of the woods, from which they could escape at times to hunt or to ride and run over the open lands by moonlight or starlight. And after the coming of men, they took ever more and more to the gloaming and the dusk. Still elves they were and remain, and that is good people." And this is capitalized, good people. These are elves. They're just different from the high elves. They're good people. They are mysterious. They keep to the twilight and to the dark, quiet places of the world. The forests, the edges of forests. You don't come across them. And there's a reason why this is described the way it is. First of all, it makes sense for the lore. These elves live and do these things in these places, and this is how they live. And they love the stars and the moon and all of that. But also, this is giving the reader an explanation for why they don't come across elves in their own experience is because over time they become more cautious. They become more wary of the greater outer world of things going on, and they retreat into themselves. This is a continual theme throughout Tolkien's work. And then we get a description about where they live, and they lived at this time with their greatest king, Thranduil. And that's interesting that he's noted as their greatest king. They've only had two. Well, Thranduil's father and Thranduil are the two recent ones. And then, of course, these groups, if you go way, way back, had potentially different kings. We'll get into that in the bonus episode, since it's not really important to the discussion right here. But they seem to be at a great place in their history, I think is what this is trying to tell us. And interestingly, we get details about how they live. "This great cave, from which countless smaller ones opened up on every side, wound far underground and had many passages and wide halls. But it was lighter and more wholesome than anything the goblins would live in. And it's not as deep or dangerous. So this is like a comfy cave. But it's not the only place where these elves live. They don't only live underground like dwarves or goblins. They live in the open woods. In fact, the subjects of the king mostly lived and hunted in the open woods and had houses or huts on the ground or in the branches." That reminds me of Lorien, right? "There were beech trees, which were their favorites." Again, specifically beech trees, which I believe we talked about in the past. And then we learn a little bit more about this cave because it works like a palace and almost like a castle. "It was his palace and the strong place of his treasure and the fortress of his people against their enemies. These caves would have been easy to protect compared to the outside huts and houses and places that they would have lived outside of these caves." So this was a stronghold of a sort. They could hide in the caves. The entrances would be difficult for enemies to find. And if they could find them, they'd be natural bottlenecks that would be easy for them to defend. It would be very hard for invaders to get into, well, the palace and the treasure that Thranduil covets so much. Okay, so what about Thorin? Well, they drag him not so gently, for they did not love dwarves, and they thought he was an enemy. Now remember, they're not evil people, they're careful. They feel like they've been approached by this band in the woods, and it makes sense that they'd be cautious about things in the woods, because the woods likes to throw dangerous things at them, like spiders, and yet that's not what Thorin was doing. And not only was the forest dangerous and potentially going to send things at them, which they've been conditioned to believe, but they had a history with dwarves stealing their treasure. And this is a reference to the Naglamir. Remember the story about Thingol towards the end of the Silmarillion, when he has the Silmaril and he wants to display it on a necklace. And so he designs a necklace and has, or at least has the dwarves design a necklace, and they create it for him. And then he stiffs them on the payments. And at this point in the story, we're like, oh, he seems like he's becoming a better guy. But yet he still makes that kind of decision, betrays them, at least from their perspective. He seems to have his own justification. And things become real bad. Well, those were not Thorin's people. Those were elves from the Blue Mountains. And that was a very long time ago. But Thranduil remembers this because he and his father came from Doriath. They may have been involved with these happenings in the past, and he's never forgotten. It is only fair to say that the dwarves gave a different account and said that they only took what was their due, for the Elf King had bargained with them to shape his raw gold and silver and had afterwards refused to give them their pay. So they have their own version of the events, and of course, Thorin's people know of the history of this, but they were not involved. Thorin's people were not living in the Blue Mountains. He descended from a different clan of dwarves. Then we get some details about Thranduil, and again, they don't mention his name. They just call him the Elf King. He had a weakness for treasure, especially for silver and white gems. What sometimes shines silver or white light? A Silmaril. Now, that may also shine gold lights, but the shining of silver and white gems would be at least a reminder of the Silmaril, which Thranduil may have glimpsed at some time in his past. And then we're told that these elves don't mine. They don't look for their own metals and jewels, and they don't even trade. They just keep to themselves, and yet he has this lust for treasure, it seems. And then we're told here very specifically that Thorin's family did not have anything to do with the old quarrel that was spoken of here, which you can imagine would have angered Thorin even more. Like, just because those were dwarves, they weren't my people. They're not the same. And on top of it, we were just looking for food. We're not attacking you. We are in no means able to take on a bunch of elves and attack them for seemingly no reason. And we get this text here that gives us a glimpse as to the way that this conversation went. In just a few lines, and I'm sure it was deeper and more complex than this, but this is what we get. "Why did you and your folk three times try to attack my people at their merrymaking?" asked the king. "We did not attack them," answered Thorin. "We came to beg, because we were starving." "Where are your friends now, and what are they doing?" "I don't know, but I expect starving in the forest." "What were you doing in the forest?" "Looking for food and drink, because we were starving." "But what brought you into the forest at all?" asked the king angrily. At that, Thorin shut his mouth and would not say another word. "Very well," said the king. "Take him away and keep him safe until he feels inclined to tell the truth, even if he waits 100 years. Now, you have to remember, 100 years in the lifespan of an elf isn't very long, but in the lifespan of a dwarf is considerable. And to somebody who's a young reader of this, that would seem impossible. That would seem well beyond a time period that they could imagine and much older than anybody they would have known. But they treat Thorin well. They give him food and drink, and he eats actually very well, to the point where he feels, well, the food isn't great, but he feels satisfied and is not hungry anymore. And then we're again reinforced with the idea that the elves are not evil. They were not goblins. They were reasonably well-behaved, even to their worst enemies, when they capture them. And this group in particular gave the spiders no mercy, so they clearly had to deal with them very often. But then we get this last paragraph of this chapter. "There in the king's dungeon, poor Thorin lay, and after he had got over his thankfulness for bread and meat and water, he began to wonder what had become of his unfortunate friends. It was not very long before he discovered." But that belongs to the next chapter, in the beginning of another adventure, in which the hobbit again showed his usefulness. I love the little glimpses here about the future and the quaint way that this chapter is wrapped up compared to other chapters. Usually we don't get a, "All right, we're getting ahead of ourselves, let's get to the next chapter." It's interesting, right? All right, thank you again for tuning in to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. In the bonus episode this week on Patreon, we will be digging into the history of the Sindar and the Green Elves and where they broke off from each other and how they come back together in the Forest of Mirkwood and how all of that makes sense, because it is a little bit complicated. We'll get into it. But thank you for your support and continued listening to this show. Also, thank you to our newest patron, Cacper. Welcome to the Patreon, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. If you'd like to sign up, get ad-free episodes, get a ton of bonus episodes. So if any of the listening has gotten you going, well, wait, there's more. What else is there? There's more. There's a lot. There's lots of bonus episodes available to you if you sign up. Thank you for everybody's support, and especially thank you to all of our VIP patrons who get shout-outs every week. Let's see if I can get through the list without messing this up. AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Avariel, Azul Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Captain Legolas Turner, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Who On Is My Hero, Jezzer, KDS, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Single Ent Looking for Entwives, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor 97. Thank you again for all of your continued support. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If it's in the US, I'll be able to read it out on a future episode. If it's somewhere else, it's still very, very helpful, especially if it's somewhere else. We get almost half of our listeners in the US, but we have lots of listeners in many different countries, and many different countries have their own view of the Apple Store, and those stores sometimes even show things in different languages. So that would be extremely helpful to help expand the audience and let people from your own country know that, hey, this is worth listening to, as long as you speak English, because that's all I speak, obviously, and even not that very well. But thank you for your continued support and ways of helping to share the show with your friends and review it online and all of that. All right, I'm going to go record the bonus episode this week. We're going to have fun talking about Green Elves and the Sindar and the Teleri and the where all this stuff connects. So go check that out if you're part of the Patreon. And until next time, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio. Or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.